True Talk, 800 AM.
Oregon is one of only a few states where sexual abuse or custodial rape by prison employees is not against the law. Not too long ago, they tried to change all that down in Salem, and of course, that didn't go over too big. So it is still not a crime for prison employees to sexually abuse female inmates. Joining us now is a woman who knows all too well that there ought to be a law against that. Her name is Cindy. Well, that's what we're calling her, to protect her privacy. She was incarcerated down at the Oregon Women's Correctional Center down in Salem from 92 to 98. And unfortunately, she was just one of the casualties in the fact that there is no law when there ought to be a law. Cindy, thanks for being with us to tell your story.
Thank you.
Tell me a little bit about how this abuse started.
It started with the time that I would spend in the craft room and working on special projects. The man in charge got to know me, got to know my circumstances, how much good time I had, you know, just like befriended me. And somebody that I thought really had our best interest at heart as the female inmates and wanting to help us. And so I would open up and I would talk to him and tell him what I wanted to do when I got out of prison and what I was looking forward, you know, and the main thing was being with my family again. And it started off very almost innocent in my eyes, where when I didn't always have money for canteen and or couldn't afford a pack of coffee because I needed to buy my shampoo and my soap and my toothpaste, a bag of coffee would have paired my canteen back for me. You know, and I knew where that was coming from, and he let me know where it was coming from. Or I wanted to take pictures, but I didn't have pictures for when my family came to visit, and he would make sure that I had credits for pictures to be taken with my family in the visiting room. And so that's where it started, kind of combing me. From there it progressed to making sure I had time alone in the craft room to work on a project that we were working on for the Richmond schools in Salem. And nobody else would be down in the craft room at that time. It would be closed off to the population. And that's when he first made the advances at me. And an underlying threat of, you know, you really enjoy being down the craft room by yourself and working on this project that's really special to you. And you like having your cup of coffee, and I try to make sure you can take pictures with your family. And I did like taking pictures with my family, and I liked the time that I had in the craft room by myself to work on this project. And then it progressed to of what happens when women are assaulted or harassed, how they're put in segregation, and they're immediately punished by being placed in segregation until an investigation is done. Generally, it results in the woman not being believed, and the woman loses good time. And for me, I had a year of good time that if I got in any trouble was threatened. And so when the assaults began, it was just, you know, you want to be with your family when you get out of prison, and you have a whole year that you can lose if you say anything. And So I didn't say anything. And I was reminded constantly of what I would lose. And when you're a woman, when you're anybody incarcerated, a year of good time is the world. You hold on to that very dearly. And to this day, if things wouldn't have came out, I think part of me would have remained very silent, just so I could get out of prison a year sooner. And he knew that was his weapon, that was his threat against me.
Other inmates noticed a change in you, noticed that something was wrong. What was the tip-off?
The tip-off was, generally, I was a very happy person, trying to make the best out of a bad situation being in prison. And I became very silent, very withdrawn, and I went into anorexic behavior, and I started losing weight. And my weight actually got to a dangerous level of, if I had lost 3 more pounds, then they were going to place me in the hospital and feed me intravenously, because it was brought to medical attention. And, you know, people thought, one of the rumors that went around was I might have AIDS because of the weight loss. And so medical attention, one of the nurses, you know, started watching me very closely, and then every week I had to go in and I had to weigh in, and I was slowly committing suicide, and was in a way punishing myself for what he was doing to me. And then other a couple of the other women noticed that he acted very different when I was around. He watched me very different than he watched the other women. His whole demeanor changed. And then they just kind of started putting things together. You know, they noticed that she does have alone time down there. He is alone with her. She's withdrawn, she's angry, and this weight loss. And so they went to, and told them that they were very suspicious that something just wasn't right. Plus, two of the other women he had made indirect advances towards. And so that kind of tipped them off on what he could possibly, you know, he could be a predator. And when they told the and the what they thought, then those two officials came to me and asked me, you know, what was going on? We need you to tell us. And at first I was like, are you going to place me in segregation? That was the number one thing. Am I going to segregation, and am I going to lose my good time if I talk? And they told me no. They said, we won't place you in segregation if you talk to us. And at that time, I broke down and told them that I was being sexually assaulted by the recreation officer. And he was scheduled to come on duty in 2 hours, and they actually stopped him from coming into the prison and put him on administration leave while an investigation was completed.
After that, what happened, Cindy?
The investigation went on for a period of time, and I was given a lie detector test. And then I was eventually sent a letter stating from Internal Affairs that their findings are that the assaults did happen. They believed what I said. They did not think I was making it up.
Do you know that at this particular point in time, this individual, according to my information and the checking around that I've done, that this individual is still an employee of the Department of Corrections?
That has such a profound effect on me, to know that he still has a state job, to know that he's still with DOC, that there was no consequences for his actions. And I do not believe that I am the only victim of his. I don't believe that at all.
All right, Cindy, let's just stop right here. We're going to take a short break and then come back and just get a few more comments.
Okay.
We have more True Talk on the way. And at True Talk, we are gearing up for Operation Overcoat, and you can help by providing warmth and comfort to homeless children, women, and men this winter. Just bring winter clothing like jackets, sweaters, or pants, and personal hygiene items like soap, toothpaste, and toothbrushes to any Portland area Christian supply store and drop them in the Union Gospel Mission donation box. For more information, contact the Union Gospel Mission at 503-274-GIVE. That's 503-274-GIVE.
So, have you given any more thought to increasing your RQ?
Now look, not that I don't do okay in that department myself. It had occurred to me, you know, if I were to make a little trip out
to the Appliance Center at Northwest Natural Gas on 8th Avenue between Division and Powell to check out the 28 different gas fireplaces actually in operation is the perfect way to increase your RQ.
Romantic quotient?
Yes.
You say those gas fireplaces have the same impact as a romantic cruise?
Hey, that's it. Plus, not only does the Appliance Center at Northwest Natural Gas have 28 working fireplaces on display and all sorts of inserts and gas logs, Lanny has the most knowledgeable customer service people in the business. The best installers, too. But they do get busy around this time of year. So if you're going to up the old RQ...
Yeah. Go out to the Appliance Center at Northwest Natural Gas on 8th Avenue between Division and Powell.
True Talk. Listen for the True Talk magazine with Lou Davies. Weekday mornings at 10 on True Talk 800 AM.
Is life moving too fast? If you're self-employed or run a small business, you have no choice but to move as fast as you can. Sometimes you move so fast you don't take a close look at life's details. When was the last time you looked at your health insurance? If you don't have health insurance, or if you have the wrong coverage, serious medical bills could mount up. That's where the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company comes in. We provide affordable health insurance for the self-employed and small business owners. Call us 24 hours a day at 800-290-2089. That's 800-290-2089. If you don't have health insurance, call us. If you have coverage, call anyway. See if we can give you better coverage at a better price. Stay on track for affordable health insurance designed specifically for the self-employed and small business owner. Call Mega 24 hours a day, 800-290-2089. That's 800-290-2089. 800-290-2089. Coverage not available in all states.
Charter member of the vast right-wing conspiracy, Mary Sterrett, True Talk 800 AM.
We're back this afternoon. We're speaking with a woman we'll call Cindy, who was incarcerated between 1992 and 1998. She just recounted the horrifying story of, in the midst of incarceration, she was subjected to what is commonly referred to as custodial rape. Here was a prison employee, someone who was charged with keeping an eye on the women inmates, wound up abusing his position and abusing this woman. He is still, at this point in time, an employee, the Department of Corrections, and Cindy is telling us what an effect that has had on her. Cindy, at this point, you are out of a prison. You have gone on with your life. How has this impacted you? How is this still with you?
Oh, it is with me in my day-to-day life of trusting men, for one. You know, I know I can't judge all men by his actions. trusting the people who are supposed to help us makes me very wary of the men in my workplace. Even after these years, the sense of security of I can't let my guard down. My guard is never down. Not with any, my father and my brothers. But other than that, with men that come into my life, my guard is always up.
Is there any recourse? Have you looked into whether you can civilly wind up getting some kind of satisfaction as a result of this abuse?
I haven't. I thought that not being put in segregation and losing a year of good time, that I should get on my knees and give thanks to DOC for not doing that to me. You know, but that was the frame of mind I was in at that time. But mm-hmm. Thank you for not punishing me for him punishing me.
You have not walked away from this experience without thoughts of the other women, the women who are now still incarcerated at the Coffee Creek Correctional Facility, which we should mention is not the facility where this abuse occurred. This was at the Oregon Women's Correctional Center. What are you doing to help other women who were in your position?
I have helped co-found a group called Women Embracing Freedom Together to help women coming out of prison with services, and one of them is counseling services. Another one is I try to maintain some sort of contact in there. So if any woman has the courage to come forward, she has somebody that she can get word to, and then I can go to officials, I can bring it to the outside. And your awareness and the show that you're doing, bringing this to the public awareness, is another way. And I do some speaking about what it's like to be incarcerated and what occurs while being behind those bars.
Cindy, do you think that this is something that at this point in time, even as we speak, women are enduring at the new facility?
Yes. I do not think that you can take an environment of women who are incarcerated, who are powerless, and bring in a large amount of male staff who have power and control, mix those two together, and say, nothing's going to happen. You know, I was there the opening day when they did the house that had the open house thing. I saw all the male staff that they had there. You know, and I know that not all those male staff have the best intentions in mind.
Before we let you go, what do you want people to know about what goes on and what happens to women long after they've been released?
I want them to know that although we're incarcerated for whatever reason, it doesn't give anyone the right to abuse us, to hurt us, to assault us, to rape us. That's not part of our sentence. That's not part of the punishment. That's not okay. It's not okay in society, and it's not okay behind those prison walls. And that when you get out, it's there. It stays with you. I don't forget his face, and I don't forget what he did to me, and I don't forget what he took from me. And he was very close to taking my life. And I don't forget that.
Well, Cindy, I appreciate the courage that it took to tell this story. Certainly the courage that it takes to continue to help the women and not forget, now that you're out, not forget that there are other women who are enduring the same thing. Know that we appreciate your story, And God bless you and take care.
You too.
Right. Felt very badly having to encourage Cindy to recount that story over and over again. This afternoon on True Talk 800, we're talking about women's prison issues. We're talking about this actually all this week. We're going to be discussing this, not only custodial rape, but medical neglect, battered women. We'll talk to other inmates, actually interviews from the prison itself. With me now is Louise Bouchard.